7:08 in the morning, you're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert. This is the time when we're trying to bring some context, some history to bear on the nonstop news cycle coming out of Washington, D.C. We're calling it Impeachment Watch. Today, as you heard in the news headlines, former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker is scheduled to speak before three congressional committees who've been tasked with parts of the impeachment investigation, intelligence, Oversight and Reform, and Foreign Affairs. He was serving in the Trump administration. Reportedly, he was advising the newly elected government of Volodymyr Zelensky about how to respond to and handle overtures from Rudy Giuliani, acting apparently as the personal attorney of Donald Trump in an attempt to dig up some kind of political dirt on Joe Biden. We're joined now by someone who has a very long history of covering politics inside the Ukraine, Nikolai Petro. A long time ago, served as the U.S. State Department Special Assistant for Policy on the Soviet Union. That was under President George H.W. Bush. He's now the Sylvia Chanley Professor of Peace Studies and Nonviolence and a Professor of Political Science at the University of Rhode Island. He joins us over Skype. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if you could start by setting the table for us by the phone call that to date seems to be the cornerstone of the impeachment investigation. This is a call Donald Trump makes to Volodymyr Zelensky about 3 months after he's won election in Ukraine. Can you talk about what his election represented politically inside of Ukraine in terms of its relationship to the United States, its relationship to Russia?
Well, I'd like to start with the most important thing happening in Ukraine today, because this sets the context for what was expected of Zelensky and the problems he'll be facing now. So the most important thing is that 5 years after signing the Minsk Accords, which are a peace agreement between Russia, Ukraine and the rebels in the east, the Ukraine has literally days ago just agreed to implement them. Before, they objected to three things. One, granting the rebel regions autonomy within Ukraine. Secondly, holding local elections before regaining control over the border. And the third thing that they objected to was granting the rebels amnesty. So now they've agreed to do the first two of these, and the amnesty and the exact rights that the local rebels, the population, I should say, in the East will have are still sticking points, but it's a big step forward. So the question, getting back to what you asked, is why this change now? Zelensky, as I see it, Zelensky and his administration are pragmatists, whereas Poroshenko, the previous president, was more a captive of Ukrainian nationalism. Zelensky has big plans to grow the economy, as he said, by 40% in the next 5 years. And he knows that that cannot succeed unless the conflict with Russia ends. So to sum it up, for Poroshenko, so long as Russia is the enemy, is Ukraine's enemy, the West, he assumed, will have to support Ukraine. But for Zelensky, I think Russia is simply too important for Ukraine to have as an enemy.
So then when you read the quasi-transcript of that phone call, and Zelensky pretty early on expresses an interest in cashing a check from the United States to buy military hardware, Javelin anti-tank missiles, how do you interpret that? Presumably the weaponry is for protection from Russia, no?
Exactly. And that's all it will ever be. Why not buy it? It's I'm not sure why that's incompatible with ending the war.
So let's talk a little bit about the right-wing counter-narrative about this, which has to do with the role that Joe Biden may have played in getting a prosecutor general under the previous administration, Viktor Pshonka, fired. Is there any credibility to the claim that this might somehow have protected the interests of Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden?
So the prosecutor that is alluded to in the transcript is called Viktor Shokin. That's important to know, because if you read the whistleblower's account, at times the whistleblower narrative seems to confuse Poroshenko's first prosecutor general, Viktor Shokin, with his second prosecutor general, Yuri Lutsenko. So here's the story as Shokin tells it. As prosecutor general, he began an investigation of former President Yanukovych, who was ousted, his ecology minister, Nikolai Zlochevsky. So he began an investigation of Zlochevsky for granting licenses for natural gas extraction to his own holding company called Burisma. After President Yanukovych's removal...
And this is the company that Hunter Biden has a seat on the board of.
Exactly. And I'll... Yes. To shield himself from prosecution, Zlochevsky hired several influential foreigners and put them on Burisma's board of directors. And one of these was Hunter Biden. Why Hunter Biden? Because his father, Joe Biden, was at the time in charge of the Ukrainian portfolio at the White House. So according to Shokin's sworn deposition made on September 4th of this year, Joe Biden repeatedly demanded Shokin's removal and threatened to withhold aid to Ukraine until he was fired. Biden boasted about this himself in a January 2018 talk at the Council on Foreign Relations. And after Shokin was removed, his successor, Lutsenko, did in fact shut down the investigation. And Shokin is now suing the Ukrainian government for removing him under the pressure of a foreign government official.
Now, the line of Biden and his supporters on this has been that there was widespread support for removal of this prosecutor among Western powers, that he was seen as hopelessly corrupt and not actively pursuing investigations that needed pursuing in the Ukraine.
Right, which is an illegal interference under Ukrainian law.
But what about the substance of the politics of foreign power on the internal workings
of the Ukrainian judiciary, which is supposed to be independent?
Right, but what about the substance on the politics? Was he also, in addition to investigating Burisma, a corrupt prosecutor?
Well, that would have to be proven in a court of law. I don't know what other options. If you just want to say, well, fire him because the president of France thinks he should be fired.
Yeah.
Well, that really, there should be more than that.
So let's return to the current president, the person on the other end of that phone call, Volodymyr Zelensky. He's someone who didn't have a history in politics. He's a comedian, an actor. He had played the Ukrainian president in a dramatic comedy on Ukrainian television. Who were his political patrons? Who helped him become a contender for national office?
Well, again, this is all the common assumption made in the press. No one fesses up and says, I have bankrolled Zelensky. But the person whose name, the oligarch whose name comes up repeatedly, and who recently had a very prominently displayed photo session with Zelensky, is Igor Kolomoisky, who himself is not averse to taking credit for having supported, having groomed, having shared his own personal lawyer, Bogdan, is now the new president's chief of staff. So there seems to be a good integration there between the two. Kolomoisky is one of those people who is often seen, as you said, as one of those corrupt oligarchs who is taking advantage of the system, buying political influence in the parliament, trying to get take advantage of the law and rewriting it to the advantage of his personal financial profit, and is often mentioned, has been often mentioned by the U.S. government as a problem for the United States.
And his kind of ties in regional politics, does he have any kind of relationship with Moscow?
No, not. I mean, everyone has a relationship with Moscow in Ukraine, but he's very much Ukrainian, and to some extent Israeli political actor, because he has dual citizenship, and maybe more. But that's one place that he has gone in the past to hide from Ukrainian prosecution. But now he's back in the country, and he lost Ukraine's largest bank to nationalization, Privatbank. He is now suing the government to get back Privatbank, and the unnationalization of Privatbank is one of the issues that the IMF is holding up its financial assistance to Ukraine for. In other words, they want Kolomoisk, that particular asset, not to be returned to Kolomoisk. And Kolomoisk is obviously exerting a great deal of pressure to get Ukraine's largest bank back under his control.
So how is the news in Washington, D.C. About this phone call, about Rudy Giuliani's trips to Ukraine? How is it impacting politics in Ukraine right now?
Well, three things stand out to me. First of all, like everywhere else, it's certainly not as big a deal, because this is a local issue in America. Ukrainians have their own problems, as they see them, bigger than America's problems. But three things in that context stand out. So this is in the context of Zelensky's trip to America to meet with Trump and his speech at the United Nations. The general assessment that I get from reading the press and watching the Ukrainian television is that many people in Ukraine are disappointed because he came across, as a result of these meetings and of the leaked transcript, as very much a neophyte and a little bit of a sycophant with respect to Trump. Secondly, people in Ukraine tend to ask themselves, why is this even a scandal? Because everyone in Ukraine already assumes, as a matter of course, that American officials have no compunction about telling Ukrainians, government officials, what to do, who to fire, who to hire, what their policies should be. And they simply take that for granted. So this, even if it were entirely true, why is this unusual, a revelation to anyone in America? And the third issue is that this issue of what's happening in America is really overwhelmed by much bigger issues in the context of Ukraine, what is happening. For example, for the first time ever, the government wants to sell land, to privatize land and have it be sold, possibly or quite possibly even to foreigners. This is an enormous politically contentious issue. There's a new five-year budget that is raising eyebrows. Three opposition channels have this month been threatened with losing their broadcasting licenses. And Channel 112 has already, in fact, lost it. And of course, the biggest news of all is that the Minsk Accords, as I said, might actually be implemented. And this opens up the prospect for new, better relations with Russia. And this would be such a huge change from Poroshenko that the discussion of what might come of this, what this implies, really drowns out everything else.
All right. Nikolai Petro, that was a very interesting tour through what's happening in Ukraine. I want to thank you so much for taking time to speak with us this morning.
Thank you.
Nikolai Petro is the Sylvia Chanley Professor of Peace Studies and Nonviolence and also Professor of Political Science at the University of Rhode Island. Once upon a time, he was the U.S. State Department Special Assistant for Policy on the Soviet Union, which at the time included the Ukraine. That was under President George H.W. Bush. And that takes us to 7:24 in the morning. This is Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert. And again, we're trying to start every morning with a segment we're calling Impeachment Watch, where we take the blizzard of developments coming out of Washington, D.C., try to sort out the signal from the noise, and add some history and context to what we're hearing on the nonstop repeat cycle on the cable news network.